All right. Well, welcome to For Profit, For Purpose. And this week we'll be interviewing Frank Shankwitz, the creator and the founder of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And Frank had his life story told in a movie, which is produced in, or was just released in June 2019, and is now streaming on Netflix. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's one that is definitely a must-see.
I made my first million in real estate when I was 33 years old. I didn't believe it was possible to even be a homeowner after growing up in 20 different homes. I've spent my life learning the game of real estate entrepreneurship, to have the freedom to parent and guide my own schedule, and to express my purpose in the world. What is your purpose? How do you put that purpose behind what you do for money? I believe you were meant to make an impact. My real estate company was built around my purpose of having people discover what they are truly capable of. I'm Katrina Eileen, and this is my podcast, For Profit, For Purpose.
So welcome, Frank.
Oh, thank you, Katrina. I really appreciate this. It's a shame we have to do it this way instead of in person, but maybe all this will be over soon and we can get back to that in-person thing.
Yeah. Well, with this upcoming trip you have, I'm glad we caught you tonight before you head out for some fishing.
Yeah, looking forward to that up in the Yellowstone area.
All right. Well, Frank, thanks for being with us on the eve of your big fishing trip. And I just wanted to ask you, can you just give us a little bit of an idea of how did it all start? And I know you're a retired veteran and from law enforcement. So how did that connect to Make-A-Wish?
Well, we're going to go back a little bit. And it was in 1980 when I started the Make-A-Wish Foundation. But we're going to go back to the mid-70s. Because then I was a motorcycle officer with the Arizona Highway Patrol. And during that period in the mid 70s, there was a television show called Chips that was very popular with especially the young kids. And the people, if they don't remember Chips, it was the adventures of two California Highway Patrolmen, Ponch and John, played by Larry Wilcox and Eric Estrada. And it's like I said, very, very popular with the young children. And I was on a tax squad. We worked the whole state of Arizona. And our equipment was identical to Chips. In fact, we trained with California Highway Patrol initially. Our motorcycles are identical. Our uniforms are almost identical, except obviously ours in Arizona. But because of the popularity of this show, one day I'm patrolling way up in northern Arizona. The dispatcher, and this is before the days of cell phones, internet, if anybody can remember that. And this is in 1980. The dispatcher says, find a pay telephone. I call in. She said, we've just been informed of a little boy named Chris. He's 7 years old. His heroes are Ponch and John from Chips. And when he grows up, he wants to be a motorcycle officer for the Highway Patrol, just like Ponch and John. And the family asked, is there any way that he could meet one of our guys, since we're so identical to California Highway Patrol? And our commanders have said they would like you to be the motorcycle officer that Chris meets. And then he went on to tell me, unfortunately, Chris has leukemia. And he's 7 years old, and he only has maybe a week or two to live. So this is very important for Chris and became very important for our department. Now, they timed it where, they allowed Chris to be picked up at his hospital, our state police helicopter. His mother and his doctor allowed that. This little boy's on IVs, but our paramedics were with him and they're gonna fly him to our headquarters building. And they timed it when I got down to the Phoenix area where I'm driving into the landing zone with my motorcycle just as a helicopter is approaching. Now, I never met this little boy. All I see is his face plastered against the helicopter window, a big grin, helicopter lands. And I thought the paramedics are gonna help him out. Instead, this little boy jumps up, runs over to the motorcycle. Hi, I'm Chris. He's laughing and giggling. And he'd watched Chips so much. And I remember our equipment was identical. This is a siren. Can I turn it on? These are red lights. What's in your saddlebag? He's laughing and giggling. This little boy just came off a hospital bed. And I looked at his mother and she's crying. Why is she crying? Then it dawned on me. She has her seven-year-old back. Well, just to kind of condense this story, Chris went on that day and the next couple of days become the first and only honorary Highway Patrol motorcycle officer in the history of the patrol during that time, complete with a custom-made uniform we had for him, his own badge, which is still assigned to him today, but more important to him, his motorcycle wings. that made him a motorcycle officer. And unfortunately, Chris passed away a couple of days after this. And I like to think maybe those wings helped carry him to heaven. But my commander came to me and he said, we've just lost a fellow officer. And we just learned that Chris is going to be buried in a little town called Kewaunee, Illinois, about 180 miles southwest of Chicago. And we would like you and your partner to go back and give him a full police funeral, which we did. Now, again, this is before the days of internet. We landed at O'Hare Airport in Chicago. We're met by the major networks, CBS, NBC, ABC, all about our mission. And what we didn't know is they notified in this little area of Kewaunee, Illinois, they notified the state police, the city police, the county police, that all met us there to give this boy a full police funeral. And he was buried in uniform. His grave marker reads, Chris Gracious, Arizona Trooper. But flying home, Katrina, I just started thinking, here's a little boy who had a wish and we made it happen. Why can't we do that for other children? And that's when the idea of the Make-A-Wish Foundation was born, maybe 35,000 feet over Kansas or somewhere.
Wow. Boy, and what an impact he had on your life and everything that you did from that point forward. And you've changed, and your organization has changed hundreds of thousands of lives.
Yeah, we're so fortunate. We had an idea and we made it work. But look, and you just said it takes thousands of people worldwide to make this work. Now, Make-A-Wish now has 62 chapters in the United States, 45 international chapters on 5 continents, and we just granted over 500,000 wishes, all because of one little boy who wanted to be a motorcycle cop.
One little boy who wanted to be a motorcycle cop, and one cop who somehow had the ability to create a message that people could get on board with and not just get on board with in a little way, right? Like you mobilized, and Chris's vision and that experience with him mobilized your department. But then I know what happened was and what I've learned from you is you've just got this mind that you're able to take a message and give it in a way that people really, it moves people. And I think of the story you tell about, I don't know if we can tell it, the story you tell about Disney. And so it's not about, it's like taking like courageous action. And also, can you tell that story?
Yeah, I was the first president and CEO, and I'm also a police officer. So I'm trying to do both at the same time. And our first official wish was a little boy, again, 7 years old. When we started this, Katrina, it was for children with terminal illnesses. Leukemia was a death sentence. Now, all these years later, we changed it to children with life-threatening illnesses because through the grace of God and modern medicine, more and more children are surviving. A little boy named Bopsy, nicknamed Bopsy, and he said, I want to go to Disneyland. And we never thought about a out-of-state travel type wish. We thought, okay, we're going to try and make this happen. And our secretary kept calling Disney with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. This is our mission. And what we'd like if we can get free admission into the park of this little boy's in a wheelchair, very ill, if he could get the front of the lines. And Disney said no. Now we learned later that Disney got these bogus requests all the time. And we had no credentials. And the secretary said, I don't know what to do. They won't even talk to me. I said, well, let me call them. She gave me the name. I called the director of marketing, and I got his secretary. And instead of saying, this is Frank Shankless, president CEO of Make-A-Wish Foundation, I said, this is Officer Frank Shankless, Arizona Highway Patrol. And you can almost see her maybe setting a little smoke trigger. And she said, yes, sir, how can I help you? And I
thought, yes, sir, all of a sudden it's yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yes, sir. How can I help you? I need to talk to your director of public relations. Well, what's this about? I said, I have a warrant for one of your people. Well, guess who I got to talk to immediately? The gentleman was on the phone. But what I did, I told him, I said, I just lied to you. Here's my name. Here's my badge number. Here's my supervisor's name and telephone number. All you have to do is call him and I will be terminated immediately. But will you please listen to my story? Well, fortunately, he listened to my story. And because of that, that started a relationship with Disney, now over 40 years. Disney, hundreds of thousands of wishes, millions and millions of dollars. So I like to tell people, sometimes you got to lie a little bit, but qualify that lie right away.
Get honest real quick.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I was hoping to talk to you about is this podcast is called For Profit, For Purpose. And the idea is that behind everything that we do, there's got to be a greater reason, right? We're in business, or we're real estate entrepreneurs, or entrepreneurs in general, right? And that's the vehicle to get us to be able, that equips us to be able to do the things that is really our bigger why in life, right? And money and profit, that's just the gas for the vehicle. I heard Simon Sinek say that. That's just the gas for the vehicle, the business, to get to go where it is that we're going and doing right. What really moves us and inspires us. And so it's pretty amazing to be able to talk to you. I would think that if there's anybody that can give us an idea of branding, right, and looking at combining purpose and combining, I mean, man, you have had to have raised, I can't even imagine how much money you've been responsible personally for raising, but then also inspiring people to raise for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about combining those two things, right, our purpose, and then translate that into branding, communicating the message, and then also, what it has to bring that all together is we need fuel for the tank.
Well, yeah, and the nonprofit world is the same as the for-profit world. We've got a product that we're selling. And the only difference is we're not making a profit for it. The profit goes to the mission, but it's still the same mission. We have this thing that we're building. But the biggest thing on branding, especially the realty market, I've talked to several realty groups, and I'm going to give you an example in our little town of Prescott. I live in northern Arizona, up in the mountains, a little town of about 40,000 people. And one of the realty, there was a thing in a local paper here about a husband and his wife. They lived a real nice cottage. It was always the talk of the town, this beautiful place, well-maintained, well-kept, landscaping. And he died. And after about 4 or 5 years, she couldn't take care of this anymore. And in fact, got a notice from the city. If you don't do something, we're going to condemn your place and take it over. Well, the realty group, one of the local realty groups in town, heard about this. Now, realtors know every contractor in town, right?
Yeah.
And they got together with the contractors and people in town making donations and went and fixed that place, just put it back to the prime that it was. But the biggest thing was that they said, I suggested to them, not just the local paper, but let's contact the Phoenix market, the news stations down there, and let's put this all over. Well, the branding, advancing their brand on that little gesture, which took 2 or 3 days with all those people actually working out there, townspeople working out. Look at this realty group. They got more press than they could ever buy. And that's just a suggestion. And also, a lot of groups, realty groups, whatever, businesses like to give that check to the nonprofit. And we appreciate that. That's how we exist. But I always suggest, let's make a big splash on that. Let's not just send a check in the mail. Let's get this big giant check. Let's get the news media out there and show what this person is doing to give back the community. I mean, all that does is advance your brand.
Yeah, I love that idea of really what you're doing is giving first. And then, and the thing that I heard in there was they got the community behind it as well. It wasn't just the realty themselves, but they actually had community and contractors and people there participating and being a part of it.
Yeah, but it was all spearheaded by the one realty group.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. And so what do you have any advice on when something like that's happening? You know, one of the things I think that stops people is there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of good, right? And doing things to contribute, but they may have like a little hitch in their giddy up when it comes to making that splash, like you were talking about, right? Sometimes that might seem like, oh, you're just patting yourself on the back, and they don't want that to be confused, you know, their intention to be confused with that. So what would you say to people who have that concern?
Well, the press is looking for not only your print press, but your media, your TV station, radio station are looking for that feel good story, especially now, especially with everything's going in. And don't be afraid, in a nonprofit world, if you're afraid to ask, you shouldn't be in the business. And it should be the same for the for-profit world. If you're afraid to ask, you call that producer at that TV station, you call the local press. Hey, look what we're doing. Would you guys like to follow the story? Because we're giving back somehow. And like mm-hmm. I said, they're looking for those stories, especially now.
I love that. And it is just getting out of your comfort zone a little bit, right? Like, and that just is so second nature to you. Like, who calls up Disneyland and gets their foot in the door that way? And look what's come from that, right? A remarkable partnership.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so can you tell, what would you say is the greatest lesson you've learned so far?
Humility, how to be humble. I've always been that way, Katrina, and you and I know personally, I don't like all the awards. I mean, I do like the awards. I don't like all the splash and everything. But just to be always so grateful when somebody does something for you. And from my childhood, I learned that from my mentor, starting at 10 years old. Frank, when you can give back. And we were very poor. The poor people were feeding us. And his name was Juan Delgadillo. He's featured in the movie, his name, his character in the Wishman movie. I said, Juan, what do you mean give back? We don't have anything. He said, you don't have to have money to give back. You can give back your time. And he gave an example. Look at the widow Sanchez. Look at her front yard. It's full of weeds. Look at her porch. It's added and painted. You're old enough. You're big enough to do that because she's helping you all the time. And that's the lesson I've always learned. When you can help somebody out, give back.
And that's something that you do over and over and over. And in just the year and a half that I've known you, in every conversation that wherever I go with you, Frank, people know you. I'm like, you stop traffic and people just, they have so much love for you because of how you've impacted their loved ones or how you've impacted their lives. And they recognize you. And in every single one of those conversations, everything I ever hear you do is give first, give encouragement. You give full attention to the person that's in front of you. And, you know, it's just quite remarkable the connections you create that way.
Well, and that's a key thing you said, give full attention. I'm so flattered that on my speaking career that people want to talk to me, that they'll actually pay to come and hear me rave on for a while. But on a meet and greets, my meet and greets, and I'm boasting a little bit, are usually 2 to 2.5 hours because people come up, may I get your picture? And instead of just saying, well, yes, first of all, well, what's your name? Where are you from? What do you do? I want to talk to them. I just get that connection. And it's kind of like a payback. They paid to come and see me. I should spend some time with them. And plus, I enjoy it. I mean, you meet so many great people. And especially during that time, I meet wish children that are now adults. I mean, aunts, uncles, parents, grandparents, whatever it may be of a wish child. And to me, that's such a big reward.
And and that is such a big reward. I just, and so there you go again, right? Like you keep turning it back to, even there, it's like, I mean, you just exemplify it and model it, right? You just keep turning it back to, you know, the people who you are impacting, right? And then how they, it's just such a giving, everything you do. So case in point, what about failures? What would you say has been your biggest failure? Failures. What would you say has been your biggest failure? And what have you learned from that?
Well, we all have failures, don't we? I like to tell people life is not all puppies and lollipops. We've all got hiccups in our life. We've made mistakes and everything. My biggest failure was not being able to keep my first marriage together because of my children. And it impacted the children for a while. Now they're adults. They understand everything. But at the time, very traumatic, as it is for any child in a separation and a divorce. And that's my biggest failure, I think, that I couldn't keep that together.
And what would be your advice to people in that situation now?
Well, and it happens every day, but make it where it's not going to be the bad guy. In other words, okay, I divorced my wife or vice versa. Never say anything negative in front of the kids about the ex, whatever side it might be. in fact, praise them. I did that all the time with my girls. Look at your mother. Praise look what them. She did. Look what, my God, look what the job she's done. Look what she's done here and there. And they remember that as they're adults now. Dad, you never said anything negative about mom. Mm-hmm. And that's a positive thing because it's not about the kids in you. It's about you and your ex. So let's try and keep everybody happy if we can.
Ah, that's beautiful. What a great gift to your children and to keeping the love alive, right? So who would you say have been the three most influential people in your life?
Wow. My father, who I never really knew that much, and reconnected with him in my later years. But just such humor in that man. And his sister in the family. I just love that side of the family. And then my mentor, my father figure, when I separated from my father so many years, Juan Delgadillo, the gentleman that took me in when I was 10 years old, taught me work ethic, taught me character, integrity. Mm. I think you've heard me say this before, character and integrity are not inherited, they're developed. Mm. And how to develop that. And you do that your whole life. You keep and dwell your whole life, no matter what age. And then this young lady named Kitty, who is my wife, my soulmate, the one that thumps me on the head every now and then. Hey, buddy, get it straight out. I mean, just what the greatest relationship we've had. And it took me to get killed to meet her, so.
Oh, wow. So that reminds me of the movie. Because I fell in love with Kitty in the movie. What an amazing woman.
Yes, definitely.
So that was a portrayal of your life and the story of Make-A-Wish. How accurate was it?
When you go to the movies and the majority of movies, it says based on a true story. It's not the true story. Hollywood loves to embellish. And that's why for this, it took about 2.5 years to write the screenplay. I was a technical advisor, consultant, producer. And the biggest thing when we got started on this movie, I said, in my contract, I will have script approval because I know Hollywood wants to embellish. So that's why it took 2.5 years for them to write the screenplay because I kept saying no, no. And they say, please. We give in every now and then. But in actuality, to answer your question, about 70% of the movie is in fact factual.
Wow. It wasn't just something where they took it and ran with it. You had a real intimate, day in, day out, say or voice in how things were told.
Oh yeah. From inception, the first idea, like I said, writing the screenplay and then during the whole filming, the location process, finding locations. And again, I had to be on the set every day. If anybody's been on a movie set, it's the most boring thing there is, 16-hour days. Take, retake, retake. But then you see the end result. And even on editing, that took a full year just on editing on that to get everything perfect in there. And we were real fortunate, I think you mentioned it, a small budget independent movie, but became qualified, released in June of 2019, and became qualified for Academy Award for Best Picture, Oscar. Just, we're with the big boys. We knew we weren't going to win, but just to be with the big boys, just what an honor for the cast and crew.
And what a testament to the story.
Yeah, and then like you said, now we're on Netflix. It was only supposed to be 6 months. Netflix is now, because of the popularity, extended for another full year.
Wow. Wow. Well, it's a story worth telling.
Yeah, and if people don't know, it's a period piece, 1950 to 1980. It covers my life, started at 10 years old. To my mid-30s when I created the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And the people that influenced me, that helped me, that tried to hurt me, like I said, being killed in the line of duty, brought back to life, what was the reason for that? And it was all because I met this little boy.
Yeah. What would you say, when people are listening, there's people who have a heart and, have these ideas of how they'd like to give back. And you, of course, coming from Make-A-Wish, but I know that you're on a lot of other boards and have a real voice in nonprofits and especially with us, Level Up Seattle, right? Housing for foster youth. But what would be your best advice for somebody who is wanting to create their nonprofit and get that started?
The first thing, and I do a lot of consulting on this, Katrina, but the first thing is make sure it's about the mission and not you. There are so many people that call me, okay, I got this idea of nonprofit, and about the third sentence, how much money can I make on a salary, taking out that? And I said, I don't even want to talk to you, because what you're trying to do is make money on your idea. And let's go to the mission first. And then also research. CharityNavigator.org.
CharityNavigator.org.
Is the watchdog for nonprofits. There's about 1.2 million nonprofits in the United States right now. And I mention it because they look in there and they find out where the money is going. Is it going to the mission, or is it going into somebody's pockets, fancy trips, cars, whatever it might be? But it can also give you an idea like, wow, I want to do this thing that's going to cure cancer for a certain area. You can go on there and look into cancer and find out if there are how many other similar nonprofits there are like that. So don't end up, what I'm trying to say is don't try and mirror something that's already out there. But again, make it about the mission. And then you've got to develop your websites. You got to develop your boards, obviously your 501c3. And especially with developing a board for your nonprofit, I always like to say, find people with a big Rolodex to be on your board, because they know the people. And they have to be all like-minded people. Just like you mentioned, Level Up Seattle, I can't wait till we can get cooking on this again. For these kids. I mean,
we've got some exciting news, breaking news coming attractions that I'll share with you the next time that we're offline. But Tiffany, let me just tell you, she has just been creating some things that are going to knock this out of the park. So more to come there. So, I'd also love to talk about home. One of the things that, okay, so when we're at the Columbia Tower and you're telling your story, and it's filled with business people and starched shirts and their business coats, their jackets, just serious people. And you're telling your story. And I notice I'm starting to get, as I'm listening, I'm starting to, feel tears coming on. And I look around the room and I see a couple of men and their faces are like bright red. And then I'm listening to you. And then the next time I look, they're like, I'm in their faces. But your story is so touching to all of us in a really deep place. One of the things that I'd love to get your take on and your experience with is, we're bringing this back to the world of real estate. Part of the reason why we have this podcast is I believe real estate is a great equalizer. Real estate, the wealth that it can create, but not only that, just the bottom line of having a roof over your head, knowing that it's yours, right, makes a huge difference. And so, just as you think back over your life, how has real estate played a role in your life, and even just the story of what is home?
Well, it was a goal. Real estate was a goal. I mean, as a young boy, a single mom, she actually kidnapped me from my father, and you'll see all of that in the movie, Wishman movie. We got to get that out there a couple more times here. Wishman movie. But we lived in tents. We lived in the back of a car. We lived in nasty old houses, old travel trailer, finally, even all through high school, just nasty old travel trailer, following the Air Force. That was the best housing I ever had during the military. But then going to work at Motorola, and making the first time in my life, I worked for Motorola for 7 years before I went into the Highway Patrol. But now making a salary and to get my starter house, that was so important to me, to get this starter house, a little place, 700 square feet. Now this is back in 1967, 1968. The house payment was $100 a month, and how am I gonna afford that? But just make that very pristine, that house, landscaping, inside, everything else, and then sell it. And then you get your next house and your next house. And our dream was to have acreage up here, the ranch up here in northern Arizona. And it took 30 some years to do that by selling. And look at the market now, my gosh. The house that we're in now, we've been offered almost $650,000 for it.
Wow.
because of the property and everything else. But it's just you build. That's your goal, to build to build.
And had you not bought your first home back then, and then built and built and traded from one to the other, would you have ever found yourself in a position to be able to keep up with that, the market and the increasing costs? Or was it getting that first place that had you be able to keep up? Or are those correlated at all?
Yeah, it was that first place to start. I knew I had to start that way. And because I'm not going to live, I've never lived in an apartment. I'll never, hopefully never have to, because I wanted that freedom. Not to have the people next door. If people live in apartments, I'm sorry. I'm just that country guy. But and I just wanted to keep improving and improving.
So I grew up, and by the time my sister and I were counting it, by the time I was 18, we'd lived in 20 different homes. We just were always in a constant state of movement. And so for me, I remember just thinking that home ownership, like, that was for somebody else. That wasn't something that, you know, was possible for us. And then I started learning, right, how real estate works and how finances work. And I was home when I was 25. And, you know, once you learn kind of the rules of engagement and how it works and kind of how money works and finance and property ownership, man, that just completely changes what's possible.
Yeah, and you've got to keep up financially with the times. No matter what home you have, you got to have that little nest egg to the side, because on Thanksgiving Day, a pipe's going to break or something like that. The roof's going to leak, a tornado's going to hit, whatever. But that's just the responsibility of ownership. That's all.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, what else? What could I ask you that I haven't asked you so far?
You haven't asked me about my star on the Las Vegas Walk of Fame.
Oh my gosh, that's right. How in the heck did that happen? That was so cool. Let's see, I haven't asked you about that or your Ellis Island Medal of Honor Award.
I'm so flattered with some of these awards. I mean, you just mentioned Ellis Island Medal of Honor. I joined 6 U.S. presidents. Here's this police officer joining 6 U.S. presidents and receiving that award. I've spoken a commencement speech at the Ohio State University, got an honorary doctorate, St. Norbert College in Wisconsin, an honorary doctorate, all these other awards. And the one that's kind of fun, really, is the Las Vegas Star on the Las Vegas Walk of Fame. It's right on Las Vegas Strip. It's right by the Paris Hotel. But what is funny to me, and it's this big star, I mean, this big giant thing, but it's 2 stars away from Elvis Presley. And I had met Elvis Presley just before he died. And I'm very good friends with his stepbrother, who now lives in Las Vegas, not far from the Paris Hotel. So, and my wife, Kitty, loves to go to Vegas. And she says, the only reason we're going is we'll make sure your star is shining. And while we're here, let's have a take in a show and take a nice dinner and that. But that's the fun. They're all fun. They're all very honorable. But that was really fun, that whole procedure on that.
And so now you are off packing tonight. Thank you for taking the time out for this. Packing tonight for a fishing trip.
We're headed up to the Yellowstone area, Montana, Wyoming, up in Utah and that. Just going to take about 10 days on a road trip. Wherever there's a nice stream or lake, just stop and see what we can scare. I don't know about catching, but maybe scare them. So,
well, I wish you luck. I'll look forward to the fish stories when you go back.
Definitely. Hopefully, I'll hold up this picture, right? Hey, Katrina, look.
We'll post that right here.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, I really appreciate you being on and sharing your experience, your wisdom, and really thank you for sharing your heart. Right. And it's just something you see throughout every story, and your story of your life is the heart that you share the whole way through. So thank you for being here.
And again, if people want to contact me.
That's great. Please tell us. So how do people get in touch with you, and where do we find
We got a book out also here. We got to promote, right? Got the book.
Yeah,
out,
that's right. I got my movie on Amazon. So you can actually
autograph it. Yeah, they're both available on Amazon. For autographed copies, go to my website, Wishman1, the number one, wishman1.com. There's a merchandise section on there. You can.
And we'll put that link here in the video.
And then also you can, for my speaking engagements, because we're starting to get booked again. We had so many that were canceled. And now we're looking in November, December, starting to get booked again. So for speaking engagements.
So Frank, tell me, so I know that what I've heard, and man, that is something that people, they come and they hear you speak and they, when they leave and we ask, you know, what was that like? They're like, I have a new vision of my life, right? And I see, you know, I've got things that are important that I'm going to take action on. But who would book you and what would be your message?
Well, the message is how to give back. Everyone can be a hero. I'm not one of those speakers that sells something on stage. I don't even sell my book or anything on stage. I give you, if you're interested, here's a card, how to contact. I'm just selling this message about everyone can be a hero, how to give back to your community. And it's been successful, new career. I did 42 years for the police before I retired. But in 2016, I was the Forbes number one keynote speaker in the nation. So I got to boast a little bit, but I'm so proud of that also.
You know, yeah, I saw that you were on the top 10 list. And so then I'm Googling it and looking, I'm like, oh, he's not on the top 10 list. He is Forbes number one keynote speaker.
And that was fun. I mean, again, you know, that's my brand, right? I'm trying to advance my brand.
And great. So if they want to book you, how would they do that?
On the website, just go on the website. My manager runs all that.
Okay.
Give the date, whatever they're interested in, and we'll see if it works out.
Okay. And I have to tell you personally from my own experience, if you have a team or people who you want to really make a difference for, or get them on the same page and united and really working together, man, there's nothing like listening to Frank and his story and having people experience that together. It makes a big difference.
Oh, thank you.
True. It's true. I've seen it many times. So, okay. Anything else, Frank, that you can think of?
Yeah, one thing I forgot to mention. We're in development of a new possible TV series. I haven't even told you about this, I don't think.
No.
Because I'm going to send you the link when we're done. Some of the major networks have contacted our production team. They said we would like to develop a show, a reality show, around Frank, him being the host, and this whole team come up with an idea. So we did come up with an idea, and it's called Wishman, which is my nickname, Angel Patrol. And what we're going to do is we're going to go out to these communities that have been devastated by hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, whatever, a homeless people that needs help, veterans, whoever it might be, go in the community, help rebuild that community. My angels, I've got six angels, we're already cast. They're going to go all around the nation, come back to me and like a
Frank's angels. Angel.
Yeah. And say, Frank, we found this person, we found this community, whatever, that needs help. And let's get a team together, celebrities, go in there and rebuild help. So we've just finished the deck. We're sending it out to potential sponsors. Once we get some letters of intent, we send it to the network and hopefully it'll get picked up. It's so much fun putting together.
Oh man, well, I wish you luck with that. And you know, I think you've been an angel to a lot of people in this world, and you just keep right on going. And now you're uniting and bringing together stars and other people who can really make a difference to people who've gone through some sort of tragedy.
Yeah, and the Angel Patrol, we've got military veterans, we've got a wish child that's now an adult is one of the angels. So it's just so much fun with the six angels. They're all better looking than I am. So that's why they have the opportunity.
I love it. That's exciting. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about that as it unfolds. And let us know if there's anything we can do to help.
Definitely. We'll send you the deck.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, Frank. And have a great trip.
Oh, Katrina, thank you. So long.
All right, we're stopped our live stream.
That was easy. That was fun. It's always fun. That's the second one we've done.
I'm so glad. I don't know how I forget things like, oh, contact, right? Like, I should, duh. I made these beautiful flyers for the women's show. And all these flyers, I was like, oh, they're so beautiful. I'm handing them out. And people are like, yeah, there's no way to contact you on here.
One thing we both made a mistake on, we didn't get to talk more about Level Up Homes and about the foster children. And I don't know if you got the, I can't remember if I sent you a text or an email. There's a bill that's trying to get nationwide for the foster children that they will extend their stay in the foster home.
Really?
Yeah. When they reach 18, there was a CBS report yesterday that I saw on CBS television. And it was one of those afternoon, just news brief real thing. And I only caught part of it. And Escal said they're trying to get legislation that for a foster child turns 18 gets to stay in that home until all of this is over with.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's needed. That is needed, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not easy, right? Can you imagine launching into life and there's no jobs? That schools are closed, all the support there, it's really tough right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even, you know, wanting to go to junior college or college, they're closed. You can't go. Just like you said. And if you go, you got to have a laptop. You got to have internet. You got to have this and that. Where do they get it? So.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing about three or four shows like this a week. Some of them virtual speaking type thing. It bothers me because I can't see the audience, but. But I'm getting a lot of push where I can talk about Level Home Seattle. And everybody, such a great idea. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Tiffany is really making a lot of headway there. We've also, really our biggest challenge right now is just getting the model for this first one. But I think we're really close with the partnerships that we've created. So, DCYF, which is like CPS, is what they call it here. We've been able to make some connections and pretty good relationships with people who are at the top of that organization. And they're starting to really help us create a vision that's really in line with their experience. So we have something called extended foster up here. And so youth can stay in the system up until they're 21 if they opt in.
Okay.
But so there's some social workers, but it doesn't provide, there's so much that's still missing. Basically what it means is they get $700 a month. But still they're kind of still out. Yeah. And so what we're doing is we're working with them. They're coming and visiting houses and looking at the layouts and how we can really organize this so we can scale it up. With all the different jurisdictions and people who can help.
One of the things they're doing out of Phoenix, and I think I sent it to you last year, and now it's really expanding, is tiny homes. They've got a whole...
You did, and I reached out to that organization, and what I should be doing is dropping your name. I was just going to say, I reached out to that organization, and I don't remember that I was able to connect with them. And I think I did a couple of times. Maybe I should be saying I'm with the State Patrol.
Yeah, and they really, the kids like it because now they're not in a group. They've got their own home. Just a little tiny home, but it's
It's
in a village.
And that's what, and I remember seeing that, and I thought that was actually really brilliant. And if we could find, I'd love to know how they're sourcing those, because I looked into those up here, and it's like $70,000 for nothing.
Wow.
And then the tiny homes that are actually really nice, those are like 200,000. It's pretty insane.
Yeah.
So I know they can be made less expensive. Everything's a little bit more expensive here in Seattle. But finding out, you know, how are they doing that? How are they getting the funding for that? Everything. So if you, I'm going to look that information back up again. Did you have any connection with anyone there? Or was it something?
No, I don't, but I will. When I'm back from vacation, I'll look into that, because again, I think it's a great idea.
I do too. I do too. And I'm thinking even of the Level Up house that we have, it's a huge, like it's a third of an acre and has just a huge yard and beautiful grounds. And oh, well, you've been there, of course. And man, we could really easily put put three of those back there and still have a beautiful yard and a common space. And that would give these youth a sense of their own
exactly space. Exactly. Yeah. And they have to take care of it. They don't have to rely on anybody else. Oh, well, you clean up today and I'm lazy or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really, I'm glad you brought that up. That fell off my radar.
Yeah.
So okay.
Okay.
Well, tell Kitty thanks for sharing you with me.
You got that windshield fixed yet?
Oh my God, yes.
Okay.
Rick is going to be thrilled that I could actually say yes. In fact, we just got it fixed not too long ago. And for the longest time, you know, there's this little pass you have to put up on your windshield. Yeah. So that came down. And for the longest time, we didn't have it. I just got from Amazon the little adhesive strip. So I just put that back up like 2 weeks ago.
All right, Katrina.
All right. Take care, Frank.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye. I would love to hear about your purpose. I'm always looking for like-minded people to collaborate with, interview, or do business with. Reach out to me directly at 425-230-4499. Not sure what your purpose is? I'm happy to share the guide that helped me discover mine. If you'd like that guide and a free copy of my Amazon best-selling investment book for real estate, visit my website at katrinaeileen.com. If this podcast brings you value, please like, subscribe, and share. Thank you for listening to For Profit, For Purpose.